the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by Loughborough University. This podcast seeks to bring together the worlds of academia and professional practice. If you're interested in the latest research and trends in sport, then this is the podcast for you. Today, I'm with Neil Wood, and we're here to talk about his journey from Loughborough graduate to gaining his dream job as financial controller of City Football Group. So, Neil,
hi.
Nice to actually finally meet you. We've spoken on the phone a number of times, but nice to have you. And for listeners, we're actually back in the studio for the first time in 18 months to 2 years. So it's good to have you here, and it's good to be in the studio.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. This is actually my first podcast that I've ever recorded, so pop my cherry.
I'm sure you're going to be fine. From the conversations that we should have recorded on the phone over the last couple of months, I'm sure this is going to be a great podcast.
Yeah.
So just to kind of get the listeners to understand who you are, can you just give us a bit of background on yourself, and then we'll chat about what we're going to chat about?
Yep. My name's Neil Wood. I'm Loughborough alum, and I graduated from Loughborough in 2006, went on to become a chartered accountant with Ernst & Young, as it was known at the time, now EY, and set my stall out quite early on, having qualified and wanted to work in sport, obviously with a sports background from Loughborough University, studied sports science and maths. As a chartered accountant, I once described my dream job as financial controller of Manchester United or Manchester City, and went on a journey then with EY to build a set of expertise that would allow me to forge a successful career in sport. So then got the opportunity to interview and was successful in that interview with City Football Group, and headed up the financial reporting function of the international football group that is City Football Group, and then was promoted into the role that I once described as my dream role, as financial controller of City Football Group, and went from there really and carried on. Obviously spent just over almost 6 years in that organization, and now come out the other end and onto other things. So I'm now managing a property business, but also looking to promote education, finance education through football as well. So I'm currently finalizing an online course that can be delivered in person or live online to try to teach people about finance through the medium of football.
And lots of other kind of irons in the fire that we're going to be talking about later on today.
Yeah.
But for the podcast, we're going to dig a bit deeper into everything you've just said, really. Mm-hmm. So let's get started with why did you choose Loughborough and the course specifically that you went for?
Well, from an early age, I've been really passionate about sports, you know, and football in particular, being a sort of a man of my generation. Anybody growing up in the 80s and 90s was sort of consuming sport, definitely football, with the formation of the Premier League. So it's always something that I had a passion for and something that I was good at, and combining that with a more traditional education, in particular with maths, which is what I chose to do at Loughborough. I really wanted to set the bar high for myself and get to the best level of education in sport that I could possibly do, and Loughborough is the obvious choice for that.
And so you went through your time at Loughborough, and at the end of that time you decided you wanted to progress to somewhere like EY.
Yes, so I came into Loughborough with my eyes wide open, knowing full well that it was very unlikely that I'd forge a successful on-pitch career as a professional sportsman. So I chose sports science in particular, because I knew I would enjoy it. It was something I was passionate about, but I was conscious that there weren't that many opportunities at the time to work in sport. So I did a joint honours with maths, knowing, or at least convincing myself, that I would be able to get a job using the maths element of my degree. And when it came to the careers fair, there were limited opportunities to work in sport. So I chose a career in accountancy to utilise the safety net, if you like, of maths. And it went from there. But that niggle to want to work in sport was always there. And upon qualifying, I met with a recruitment consultant, as a lot of people do. And I can picture the day as if it was yesterday. I was sitting, feeling quite guilty, actually, about contemplating leaving an organization which was, you know, a huge international organization, and the world is your oyster once you've qualified. But at the same time, you feel a little bit like you're cheating on your girlfriend at the time, because you're sitting speaking to a recruitment consultant. You know, there's floor to ceiling glass windows, and you go through the usual pleasantries. And this particular recruitment consultant that I met asked me, well, what I heard was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And what he actually asked me was, what's your dream job? But, you know, the little footballer inside me wanted to say professional footballer. But, you know, I was I think I was about 22 at the time, and that was not realistic.
They're still playing Sunday League.
And actually, no, I was a little bit, it was probably about 25. But just to correct myself, the instant answer to that, without really thinking about it, probably sitting roughly equidistant between the Etihad Stadium and Old Trafford, was to say financial controller of Manchester United or Manchester City. And the instant response from the recruitment consultant was, you can forget that, you're not going to get that job, because, well, unless you know someone in either organisation, because those roles do not become available to the general public or to people who can recruit for them, like recruitment consultants like himself. So do you know anybody in either organisation? And I said, no, I don't know anybody in the world of football, really. I'd spent a good almost 9 years by the time I'd left, at least at that point, 3 or 4 years working in various industries in the audit practice of EY, and many of them weren't even based in Manchester. They were all across the Northwest. So my network in sport in Manchester was limited. But despite that, I left that room thinking, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I built a strategy that I didn't know was nailed on to get me to where I wanted to be, but I had a pretty good idea that it would. All around the accounting standards that UK companies would need to be able to report under, and moved the department in which I was working in EY to build a skill set that would be required in both football clubs. And without going into too much detail, that proved to be a really successful strategy, and positioned myself with a few clever contacts with the recruitment consultant called Hayes, which has got a sponsorship deal with CFG at the right time, just before the conversion of accounting standards was required. I got a phone call on I remember it as if it was yesterday, and I was standing in Tesco, my local Tesco. It was actually the one that Paul Scholes shops in, because he lives very close to me, so I often see him in there doing his local shop. And I actually got an email from the recruitment consultant at Hayes saying, I'm just finishing for Christmas, but I've got this opportunity at City Football Group. Are you interested? If you are, give me a ring on the 1st of January. I picked the phone up straight away, didn't hesitate, said that job is mine. And subsequently went through the interview process. The first interview was successful with that. And it took some time to get to the second interview, actually, because I was building a career at the time as a sort of international man of mystery in the finance space. And I was working a lot with Microsoft. And I got a phone call on, I think it was a Thursday afternoon, saying, can you be in Helsinki next week on the Wednesday? I'd already done my first interview with City, and they wanted me to be in Helsinki to go and work in the Nokia integration of their finance system, because it was one of the biggest acquisitions that I think that Microsoft had done. And it was probably another 3 or 4 weeks until I was back in the UK. So, because I went to Helsinki, then to Seattle to report back to the head office at Microsoft, all through this relationship that I'd built through this sort of weird and wacky, unique journey that I'd been on with EY. And had an interim role that I was also recruiting for with a different recruitment consultant. And he told me before I had the second interview that he thought that I was nailed on for the job, because City had told him they don't want any more CVs because they think they found the right person for the role. And then I did the second interview, was successful with that, and the rest is history, really.
That's amazing, because it goes back to a lot of the things that I teach some of the students around looking at the skills that they require for whatever job. I love the fact that you said you had no connections, because there is that perception that you have to know people in sport to get a job in sport. But I think the world has moved on. I think that still exists to some extent.
Yes.
But I think the world has moved on. If the right person is there and you can get in the door, I think the opportunities are there. And what I do a lot with the students is get them to look at, where is that dream job? And is it 5 years, 10 years time? And how can you work yourself back into what job you need now to develop what you need in 10 years time?
Yeah.
It's the exact story I try and tell students. So it's great to have you here telling them, you know, more sources they get, the more they can hear from. And so hopefully they're inspired by the international man of mystery. That also sounds like a cool job, by the way.
Well, yeah, if that was my job title, I'd be very impressed. You know, it's exactly my thought process. Networking was never my strength. I was very quiet growing up, and I let my work do the talking. It not being a strength is something that I'm ultimately trying to work on, and my network over the last 12 months has probably expanded significantly because I started to talk about the things that I've been doing, and a lot of people are interested. Now, when you're an auditor, working in Northwest businesses, someone says, what do you do for a living? You say, I'm a chartered accountant, auditor, business advisor, whatever that might be. Most people start to fall asleep. Whereas you say, I'm the financial controller of City Football Group or associated with Manchester City, people, their eyes light up.
And there's certain questions they'll ask, which we'll touch upon later. So just going back slightly in terms of that strategy, because I know we've spoken about it before in terms of Microsoft. What was there specifically that you highlighted that you thought you needed to get into the likes of City or Manchester United?
Yeah, so at the time, Manchester United were already what's called IFRS reporters, so International Financial Financial Reporting Standard reporters. All privately owned companies reported under UK accounting standards, which was the category that City Football Group, which didn't actually exist at the time, Manchester City, that they would report under. Now, the team that I moved into from the audit practice was a team that was specialised in international accounting standard conversions. And there was a requirement that was a point in time in the future that was a bit of a moving feast that would say that all privately owned companies would have to convert to a different set of accounting standards in the future. All listed companies already had to do that. And that's how this team had been formed. So I joined that team knowing full well that there was expertise in that team that I could learn from to be able to leverage that expertise and give something that's unlikely to exist in the industry of football or even in broad industry, because chartered accountancy, you tend to, if you go down the practice route, you would train as a chartered accountant. You seem to be an expert because you're freshly trained and you know all the latest sort of tricks, if you like, and all the rules that are in the accountancy space. And then you move, if you move into industry, that level of expertise could be a little bit outdated somewhat. So unless they had a recruit that was fresh out of practice, I think they would have struggled to be able to fill the skill set that I had. I actually went on a bit of a journey around the country and overseas that built a complementary set of expertise for both UK accounting standards moving to IFRS and US GAAP, which was ultimately Manchester United's reporting set of standards because they were US owned. And that I sort of stumbled across that because I was working on a big project with RBS and got an opportunity to work with Microsoft on the back of that project. And I thought to myself, well, I've got this international set of accounting standards, but I'm also now going to get this opportunity to learn about US accounting standards. And the system that Microsoft used is SAP as their finance system. And coincidentally, and this just totally randomly, SAP struck up a partnership deal with City Football Group a few months before I was interviewing. And that became the topic of conversation in the second interview. So not only did I have this sort of deep accountancy knowledge, I also had knowledge of a system that they were looking to implement through the sponsorship deal as well. So it all, obviously there's a bit of luck and a bit of timing, and the network would have been an accelerator to get into the door, potentially allow me to get there earlier. So it's by no means a bad thing to do. But I think that the opportunity to speak to people in the industry is quite limited, unless you're doing it at some sort of formal event, in which case everybody's trying to get to that person or the people who might be speaking, and it's quite difficult to do that. Plus, if you're trying to force a relationship out of nowhere, it's likely to sort of fall flat on its face in the near future, isn't it? Now, my relationships have been built through delivery of high quality work, and my reputation goes sort of ahead of me, if you like, and that then leads to more sort of substantial relationships.
I think you've hit the nail on the head with so many things there, and I'm probably going to forget half of them from what you said. But in terms of one of them, like networking. Now, networking is something that I think students need to know about. But you mentioned about everybody in a room wanting to get to the same person and all this. I think there's so much false networking that goes on.
Yeah.
And there's so many people, you know, in the sports industry and others that are aware that they're the big fish.
Yeah.
So there's I've been to a conference, a sport management conference, with one of our professors here. Mm. And he has literally said to me before, stay next to me, don't move, because I know that that person over there on the left really wants to talk to me and I don't want to. Because they're just after him for certain things. And there's, you know, that happens a lot. So there's this false networking that I don't really like. Mm. But I think the key things that you mentioned there, one, you look to kind of future-proof your skills. Mm. So graduates sometimes think, you know, well, I've graduated now, I know everything. And it's very much, no, you don't. You're fresh. But let's pick into those bits where you need to grow and you need to continue developing, like you mentioned with the US kind of accounting system. Mm. Do your best work. You know, it sounds like reputation-wise, you did your best work and that's what grew your reputation. Not necessarily sometimes false networking that some people do. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned it before I did, luck sometimes plays a part. You had a goal, you worked towards it, you did everything you could to make that happen, and then the door opened and there was some luck involved there. Maybe that door didn't open, you went somewhere else, but you'd still develop that skill set and you're still given everything to that opportunity.
Yeah.
It just so happens that opportunity arose. So, you know, I think it's a brilliant summary of what you did. I think some of the key questions others would want to know is what's it like then? So you got in at Manchester City, you became the financial controller. What's a day in the life in that kind of role?
Well, I'd had a lot of exposure of different office environments, from my days in audit to working in Microsoft, where you had a basketball court outside of your, you know, your office.
Have you had an office where there's a slide? I've been to one.
I'm trying to think.
It was in Manchester as well, actually.
No, I don't think I have.
So, social media company, let's say. Okay. A Loughborough graduate.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard of Spoorf. You heard of Spoorf? So I went to their offices and there was a slide there.
Right, okay.
And I didn't go on it.
Maybe I can get on that slide at some point. I'll take my kids.
So do they have things like that at Man City?
They don't have slides, but they've got a paddle court that was requested by Mikel Arteta. So it's big Spanish, I think South American, actually, the origins of paddle, which is I don't know if you know, but it's a hybrid between tennis and squash. It's a fantastic game to play.
The new owners at Notts County think they're building one on the back car park.
Right, okay. Interesting. So the nearest one to Manchester was actually in Huddersfield, which is up near where I live. And Mikel, when he was there at the club, said, I want to play paddle, but I don't want to be travelling, you know, 45 minutes if plus up the road to do it. So will you build me one? And so we did. I didn't build it myself, but we authorised the budget, and the staff get to use it. It's fantastic. So the way I've described working there, so I remember walking onto the Etihad campus for my interview, and it sort of brings tingles down the back of my spine, because I instantly felt at home, because it reminded me of being on campus at Loughborough. And the way that people have described the Loughborough campus to me, having been on it as a visitor, so competitive teams, you know, from different universities on a Wednesday afternoon when we've been walking from the sports hall to the students' union, is, you know, it's like, wow, this place is like something out of a movie. And it is like that. You know, it was an open plan office that we sat in. We overlooked the academy pitch, the EDS pitch is also where the women play. So on a Champions League night midweek, you'd get the under-18s playing on that pitch. So the Wednesday or Tuesday afternoon, whenever they were playing a home match, that, you know, the workload was a bit of a write-off at that point. Everybody was just coming over to our desks, watching the game, because it was floor-to-ceiling glass looking onto the pitch. But yeah, it was challenging. That, you know, growing up, if you like, in a Big Four environment is a heavy workload. So I wouldn't describe it as being as heavy as that. You know, there's an expectation that you will work good, solid 70 hours a week as a trainee in a Big Four environment. And I wouldn't change that experience. It helped me grow into the person that I was. So it's not that intense. And once you're in any industry, I would expect.
For context, going from a Big Four into that, it's not that intense. I would imagine it may still be quite intense.
Yeah, I would imagine that it is. A lot of people, you know, would describe City Football Group as being a huge organization. And for me, it wasn't. It was relatively small. But that was just a function of my experience and you know, the complexity of the CV that I sort of built beforehand. But that was why I had a USP to get in there to begin with. But overall, yeah, very hectic days. There were days when, once I got the financial controller role, I was responsible for 16 people plus my own workload. So often I wouldn't even start work until 5 o'clock when everybody else started to go home. You know, on the upside, you get free gym membership. You get to work out in the gym downstairs. There's free food, free breakfast and lunch. So, you know, it's very healthy. It's sort of taking bits from the menu from the players to bring across to the staff. Christmas parties are pretty cool. There is a video of me, I think it was an end of season party, singing live band karaoke and Oasis to the players. You know, we had an end of season party with Pep on stage being sung to by a gospel choir in Manchester Cathedral on a Monday night, I think it was, with mass scheduled at 10 a.m. the next morning. So it was a bit like a scene from Little Nicky or something.
the best photo, I've said this to students before, and the guy who this is about doesn't even know this, but anyway, the best photo I have of Facebook, friends on Facebook, so right. Somebody I was at university with, he used to work at Manchester City as well. He's got a picture of himself at the after party when they first won the league.
Right.
And he's got Joe Hart's medal on. He's got his arm around Ricky Hatton and his other arm around Liam Gallagher.
Oh.
I'm like, that is the greatest photo.
Yeah,
that's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah,
so I can see Man City, you know, they play well, but they may like to party at times as well.
Yeah, it's definitely a work hard, play hard culture. And, you know, it's probably changed a little bit since the pandemic. You know, everything has, the whole world's changed, but you know, the heart and soul of the club is still there. The organisation is looking to continue to grow around the City Football Group brand. You know, that in itself makes it exciting for anybody looking to work with that organisation or in football. And I think that what they're looking to do is sort of transforming or has transformed football.
Well, that I think also transformed that area of Manchester, because when I went, I did a tour around there with a student group probably 8-10 years ago. Mm. And all of that, the facilities you're talking about were being built along with the college there and everything. Yes. There. And the facilities and the plans that were on the wall, they even gave us an insight into like kind of their business plan. Mm. Around how much they're going to be spending, how much they then want to develop talent. So you've now got Phil Foden running around and you think, wow, this is 10 years ago, you were telling me you're going to do this. And now you're putting Phil Foden on a pitch. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal in terms of their plans and what they've done as a team.
Yes.
But that's slightly an aside. So in terms of work-life balance, you found it better at City by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I was having a very similar conversation before we came into the podcast about work-life balance and about prioritising certain different things. And, you know, the life that I was leading was, like I said, I described it as an international man of mystery. I was very rarely in Manchester, so I was forging a very successful career in an advisory role in London and in Ireland and in the US, wherever it might be, but none of it was in Manchester. And I'd met a girl at the time, and it was actually, I'd spent 18 months in Dublin working with Microsoft, and then I got the opportunity to go to Seattle for 6 months to lead a global implementation of some of their SAP software. And the conversation happened at some point in there to say, it's either me or the job, sort of thing. So it wasn't just the fact that I wanted to work in sport. I wanted to work in sport in Manchester. And the description of my dream job being one of two roles in two very prestigious organizations, I think with hindsight, it's quite a difficult thing to achieve. It's not like I said, I want to just work in a football club in the country, of which there's plenty of opportunity. It was one of two specific roles in those two specific organizations. So it's quite narrow. I don't know what the odds would be of being able to do that, but it might be that I had more chance of becoming a professional footballer, because there's just so many more roles available there as a footballer, because I've just picked two. But yeah, the part of the driver behind that was the work-life balance. Not so much the workload, but more of the ability to live a life that I want to live, which is, you know, being able to see now my kids are born, you know, one's five, one's three. I want to see them grow up rather than be the absent father that might be very successful with lots of money, but never in the country.
So you worked hard at a young age, you've got back and you got into that position that you wanted to be in. Yeah. It would be amiss of me not to ask this. You can already smile. I know you know what's coming. So obviously at your time at the club, there was financial fair play kind of came into play. And obviously Man City have had a few issues with it.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through anything you can talk us through of your involvement with the financial fair play and how things are kind of panned out or panning out?
Yeah, so I mean, my team was responsible for the submissions from obviously when I was in the organisation to when I left. Very specific set of complex rules that run into the hundreds of pages of rules, and you know, it's something that I do go into in depth in the course that I've designed. It's sort of my expertise. In terms of the more controversial areas, you know, it was as much a surprise to us in the club as it was to anybody else when things kicked off in that space. And, you know, I played my part in trying to, you know, represent the club. And I think it's clear for everyone to see from a UEFA standpoint, it was tried and by UEFA, and UEFA had a desire to kick the club out of the competition, but CAS stepped in and it was overturned. So I think that for me, it's unfortunate, because I've left the organisation having learnt about the result from home. You know, so like everybody else, was probably sitting refreshing. Well, maybe not everybody, because it's not that important to everybody, but everybody, I hope, in the organisation was sitting refreshing the page at CAS to see what the result was going to be. And then you sort of look around and go, well, we've done it, but I can't hug anybody because we're not allowed to, and I'm sitting in my bedroom.
COVID came into those times as well. Yeah,
yes,
that's a fair point. So you mentioned very briefly there, you mentioned the course you're developing, and I know we mentioned it at the start. So we know now, obviously, you've left Citigroup. Mm-hmm. And what is it you're looking to do now specifically with the course?
Yeah, so upon leaving City Football Group, my boss described me as having... You know, basically said you can count on one hand the number of people that know more about FFP than you do, which is going to be an exaggeration. But he said that must be worth something to someone. And it got me thinking, you know, how can I use this knowledge? Maybe I could sit on the board of a football club, or maybe I could do some consulting, but I've got this other full-time job that, you know, consumes most of my life. So how can I put this expertise in a box and allow someone to benefit from it? And the obvious answer to that in a ever-changing world of education where everything was shifting online was to create an online course. And that's what I went away and did. So I took some time out between the two roles and started to document really what I would need to know as a 10-year younger version of myself, describing that role as my dream job and what I would benefit from if I would have known it then. Because not only did I not have the network, I didn't have the specific knowledge of football finance that would allow me to literally annihilate an interview. If I was to know it, what I used was in my interview was talking about everything that I could bring to the industry, not about the industry itself, because I knew little to nothing about it. So it's really packaging up my experience in a short course fashion. So it's quite difficult to take what would be almost 15 years of chartered accountancy experience almost six of which are in the football industry and shove it into sort of a 12 to 16 hour consumable short course. So it's the highlights, if you like, of the important bits of what you would need to know. But I often got contacted on LinkedIn by parents who seems a bit weird for me to describe it as if we're saying, my son wants, or my daughter wants your role, wants your job. How can they get it? Does City do an apprenticeship scheme, or you know, can you do internships and things like that? And I thought there is a demand there for it, but regardless of whether there is or not, I'm not necessarily looking to do this to make any money. It's more of utilizing the knowledge. And as a finance professional working in any industry, if you're going to be successful, I believe it's about sharing your knowledge. It's about passing down to sort of the people who are working with you that might not be as qualified as you are, you know, as time served, if you like, to share that knowledge, and that naturally pushes you up the chain to allow you to build a high performing team. And that role of a coach in the sporting context is quite obvious, but is one that I took on informally as a finance professional as well, building a team of 16 people that was responsible for everything from payroll and processing invoices all the way through to financial fair play or submitting tax returns and things like that, or the finance system. So it's quite a broad role and set of experiences that I got. And that was at a level where I could articulate myself in the detail, but also be able to extract myself and talk to board members about significant issues or things that were going on in various aspects of finance.
It's an interesting one that you probably for another time, but you know, referring to the in finance of kind of coach, mentor. Previously people might have been manager, but the coach, mentor and kind of leadership way of advancing followers is an interesting way that's developed over the years in many more organizations. And it sounds like that's the way it's gone in Man City, which I think in a lot of sports organizations, probably the early developers of that kind of coaching environment and taking it from the pitch into the boardroom, into the office sounds like what it was like at Man City. So that's
To be honest, I could go off on a whole tangent about dual careers, and that's probably another topic for another time.
We've actually done one.
Right, okay. Well, I'd love to be involved in that because I've got my own thought process around the whole dual career pathway. But I would imagine that the vast majority of athletes would bring us an excellent set of skills to the boardroom. You know, that high performance team, particularly at the highest level of the Premier League, if we could get them off the pitch, and I think Vincent Kompany threatened to join our finance team as he was leaving the club.
But he's done his MBA, Vincent Kompany.
Yes, and I think this is part of the idea of being able to teach players, agents, or aspiring finance professionals the topic of finance to enable them to be able to negotiate contracts or understand the club's perspective, or even benefit themselves from a personal tax point of view, or what the consequences of the decisions might be from an FFP perspective or tax perspective, but also being able to transition out of sport but back into sport off the pitch. Yeah. And that, for me, is such an important topic for us. And people might say, well, you know, these footballers, they earn so much, and so what if they injure themselves and they have to not play again? But it's their whole identity that's being taken away from them. Whereas if you can give them an outlet or an option that's still within something that they know, love, and are passionate about, and have a high level of knowledge and expertise in, but it's slightly different in terms of off-pitch success, then you know, if I can inspire one football player to you know, think again about the darkest days of the end of their career and think that that's not going to be the be all and end all of their life. It doesn't have to be the defining moments of their career. There is a life after sport, and it comes to all of us, doesn't it? You know, anybody that's involved or passionate about sport has probably played it at some point. And, you know, my on-pitch days came to an end quite early on in my life, but I've been able to forge this other career that isn't often talked about, but is acknowledged in the club environment, to say, well, I wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for the backroom staff. And, you know, Pep was talking about the groundsman on the weekend because of the snow. You know, the players wouldn't be able to play if it wasn't for the people that sit behind the players. And that includes everybody from the cleaner all the way through to the legal team, to the finance team, HR team, you know, whoever looks after the stadium and everybody off the pitch. So there is an acknowledgement there, especially at the City Football Group, where, you know, it's not just about the players. Obviously, they're the spectacle, but there's a whole support network behind them.
And that does seem genuine at City. But some of the things you touched upon there were around players. And I think there has been a growth since people's understanding of kind of mental health has developed, probably over the last 10 years. I think there has been an understanding that actually, you know, players are people too. And that, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and things like that, I think have brought new perceptions to people to actually go, yeah, they might be on X amount of money per week, but actually they still bleed. You know, yeah. They still get upset. And having that understanding that, well, when their career comes to an end, losing identity, as you mentioned, is huge.
Yeah.
So creating a new identity or developing a second identity within football or within sport,
yeah,
I think is a great opportunity for players to do. And I know, you know, the PFA have been looking at these kind of things for a while of dual career or second career for players throughout. Yeah. So I think there's huge opportunities there.
Mm.
So what does, other than the course, what does the future hold for yourself? What else are you looking at? Because I know from speaking to you before, I know, you know, Dare to Dream, you're a bit of a dreamer, but also you've tended to succeed in these dreams. So what else is there for you?
Yeah, so my son's primary school teacher asked me what I did. I don't think she used the word for a living in there, but what do you do, she said, and I said I'm a daydreamer. And I've actually got to the point in my career where I feel like I'm not in a time for money exchange, for, you know, I'm not paid for my time, I'm not paid for that, I'm paid for more for my knowledge. I've got a set of expertise that can really add value to people, and it's quite interesting and engaging. So I'm currently running a property business, and we've got ambitions to offer players, agents and high net worth individuals the opportunity to work with us in the commercial property space, to be able to invest and look again at that life beyond football. So if anybody's interested in that, feel free to get in touch through the podcast and we can talk about that. But also I want to educate as many people as possible about a successful sports career that would probably be more applicable to the majority than the minority, because I think the NCAA stats are quite horrific. That, and I only use those because those are the ones I could get hold of, that 5% of NCAA student athletes go pro in sport and 95%-ish go pro in something other than sport. And it doesn't have to be the case that you go pro in something other than sport. You can still work in the sports industry and be successful. And my recommendation is that if you have an ambition to do that, that you go and find your expertise elsewhere before going into the industry that you want to. Because then you've got a different perspective, a different set of skills, and really, you can really make a splash and an impact when you get to your dream job. Yeah. I might just be saying that because that's the way I did it. Now, if someone offered me the role 5 years earlier, I might have taken it.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. We all, you know, we're all surrounded in what we know and what we've done and our experiences, and that might be what we give. So, you know, just as a final reflection, really, reflecting back to students. So the students now, the students thinking of coming to Loughborough, their students who are currently at Loughborough, what advice would you give them around their future and their career? And I mean, you've already touched upon it with athletes as well.
Mm.
What would you give those people starting out now? What advice would you give them to get to their dream job?
Well, anybody going to university in general, I think the number of people going to university now has increased massively in comparison to what there were when I went. And even then it was the numbers were quite significant. And when you're coming out the other end, what I found was that employers wanted to know, what else can you bring to the table? So anybody coming to Loughborough, I'm guessing you're going to be interested in sport. And I would recommend to grab hold of as many sporting opportunities as you can, whether that's on the pitch, whether that's with the athletic union that I got involved in. I was a co-opted member there. I was also the chair of the basketball club. And what it meant was, when I actually think back to one interview, I fell flat on my face. I just didn't know how to interview. So one, practice your interview techniques as you're interviewing jobs, but don't be scared of failing in that respect, and go for jobs that you're not necessarily that, not necessarily not keen on, but you're quite happy to not get because you are going to fail. But use the environment that you've got at Loughborough to have something other than your degree to talk about, because that's the expectation of employers now, that you know there's a whole bunch of people that have got degrees, and a differentiating factor is going to be the subject that you've chosen and the institution in which you've been able to get to. But also, what have you just done that for 3 years, or have you done anything else? So have you set up your own business? Have you built a website? Have you gone on a Gymshark journey, or have you thrown yourself at a football club or a sports organization on campus to be able to really make a difference? Have you taken a back office role in that respect? So really just grab those opportunities around sport to then take them into your working life.
Neil, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for the insights into your development and your career and touch upon Citigroup. I know we've got the rest of the day now. We're going to meet and talk about some of these opportunities after this, and then we're going to have a lovely lunch in Elite Athlete Centre.
Sounds great. Thank you very much. Cheers. Thanks, Martin.
Thanks for listening to Experts in Sport. If you'd like to get in touch to discuss any topics that you'd like to hear about, then contact me, Martin Foster, via my email, m.foster@elborough.ac.uk. Bye for now. See you next time.